NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Hello, Todd.
Well, hello there, John. And from the looks of it, I think you're doing something from an airport lounge with your iPhone.
I am. I'm in Los Angeles waiting to take a flight to Australia. And since we needed a podcast, decided to do it live from the Admirals Club.
And before you were at the Admirals Club, you were at the NBAA in Las Vegas, which, as is usual, all sorts of new and innovative things in aviation and aviation safety. And I would talk about NBAA under normal circumstances. These are not normal circumstances, not because of the incident we're going to discuss, but because you, Mr. John Golia, have been selected to the Aviation Hall of Fame. If there was an audience here, they'd be standing up and cheering right now, because the Aviation Hall of Fame, as the name implies, is something that very few people get into. And in your case, it's because of what we all know on this podcast, your lifetime of work promoting aviation and the maintenance profession. In fact, you were telling me, you're the first person who has been selected to the Hall of Fame, whose primary career field and primary impact in aviation was in maintenance. So hats off to you again. I can't do justice to honoring this selection of yours. We will have a future show with all the regulars of Flight Safety Detectives where we'll do you upright. In the meantime, what we have to talk about here is an incident that happened just a few days ago. The opening night of NBA season was earlier this week, and in Boston, there was a pregame show inside the NBA, which, if you're an NBA fan, you know it well. Shaq is one of the main characters on there. They're doing an outside show in front of the Government Center, in the plaza in front of Government Center in Boston, downtown Boston. The Celtics were playing, of course. And there was a drone being operated by an employee of CNN who was doing this on behalf of the show, which is a TNT show. There was an accident. The drone apparently hit a utility pole of some kind, fell into the crowd, and injured two people. Now, fortunately, the injuries were minor, but there are a lot of things that are being brought up by this, and some of those things are being mentioned in the news clip that we're about to play from WBZ in Boston.
The FAA is now investigating a drone crash at Boston City Hall Plaza last night during the Celtics party. As WBZ's Christina Rex shows us, this is what happened. And new at 6, she looks at the rules surrounding drones in crowds like that.
As the crew breaks down from a huge Celtics watch party on City Hall Plaza last night, two people are recovering from injuries from a drone crash.
If I'm standing up, I only had my hand like this. If I had it like this, I would have had my hands cut off because of the blades.
Derek Scrima was grazed by a falling drone during Tuesday night's festivities. According to a Boston police report, an on-duty officer observed the drone crash into a light pole after it flew between two trees. Okay, it's 9 to 5. That moment briefly stopped the show, according to witnesses. The drone operator was a CNN employee who was working shooting video for partner station TNT during its Inside the NBA live show.
You're required to have a Part 107 remote pilot license.
Chris Rudolph is a drone pilot and instructor and explains to WBZ that in order to fly over a large crowd of people, the company likely had to get a special waiver from the FAA and have extra eyes on hand, plus report the incident immediately.
We know we've got a area of trees or utility poles, power lines, things like that, that could be a factor in our flight that we can't see that well from our vantage point. That's a location where we would want to make sure that we have visual observers.
And the FAA is investigating this incident as well. Fortunately, all the injuries were considered minor and everyone's expected to be okay. In Boston, Christina Rex, WBZ News.
Now, many of you who are out there, especially those of you who have Part 107 certifications like I do, to do commercial drone operations, are asking questions like, how can you possibly do something like this over a crowd at night when the potential for an incident or an accident is higher than a normal flight? And quite simply, the FAA does have certain exemptions for the basic rules of Part 107. One of those rules being flying drones over people who are not involved in the actual flight itself. There's a certain process one goes through, typically a certificate of authorization, which allows someone to operate outside of the normal regulations of Part 107, usually with a lot of other safety factors built in. For example, requiring visual observers, limiting what kind of flight can be done, that sort of thing. But again, this is one of those times where there's a clear drone incident. It's being investigated at the very least by the FAA. It may or may not be investigated by the NTSB. And John, you can give us some insight. Why is something that's so high profile, nationally broadcast show, crowd of people, drone falls into the crowd, two people are injured? Why wouldn't the NTSB investigate this? So why wouldn't the NTSB investigate this event?
Well, they have a lot of latitude in what they investigate. In what they don't, they can delegate to the FAA to do, because the FAA is required to participate in every event, at least go out and take notice that it occurs. And basically, it boils down to a budget issue. They just got their budget, but now they have to make that budget last for an entire year. Accidents have been down, commercial accidents have been down, but you got to be frugal with your spending. They haven't had a serious budget increase in over 10 years. So with inflation, that means they're having essentially a budget cut. So the chairman is in a very difficult spot in picking and choosing what they go to investigate. And even though this may be high profile, the injuries were relatively minor. One person got more injuries than the other. And there's no fatals. Fatal accidents take precedent. So she's in a difficult spot right now, the chairman, trying to maintain and do what everything has to be done and still keep her budget intact enough to last a year.
For those who are flying drones out there, either Part 107 commercially or recreationally, a few things you have to keep in mind. There are a lot of restrictions as to where you can fly, and this particular location in downtown Boston is fairly close to Logan Airport, and there are very strict limits as to where you can fly within something like 8 nautical miles of Logan Airport, and certainly downtown as well within that. There are also restrictions of flying drones near any sort of major sports activity. For example, the NFL, Major League Baseball, if there's a game on, there's typically, in most cases, about a 3-mile exclusion zone where you're not allowed to fly. Most commercial drones off the shelf have built-in software that prevents you from doing so without difficulty. But there's no restriction if you have a home-built drone that doesn't have that software geofencing built in. And there are legions of events in the FAA UAS sightings database, which details drones which are flying well outside of required areas, sometimes thousands of feet high, miles away from the operator, well out of visual line of sight. There are ample examples of people misbehaving with drones. This is an example where they did it right. This was a television production professional who I presume had not only a Part 107 certificate, but training to do that sort of flying in those tight spaces. And because this is a network quality broadcast, the camera that was on this drone, the payload, is probably not the same kind of camera you would get in a commercial off-the-shelf drone that weighs 250 grams or even one that weighs 3 or 4 pounds. So it'll be interesting to see if they ever release this, what kind of hardware was being used, and whether there are issues with this kind of hardware being used around crowds for television production such as this.
If it's in and around the high-rise buildings in Boston, around the stadium, basketball stadium, the winds are awful tricky. You know, we want to, thinking backwards, we have what they call the Prudential Insurance Center. And years ago, people were lifted right off the ground and thrown hundreds of feet with some serious injuries. Not on a stormy day, just on a windy day. And the wind did strange things going through the buildings. And it seemed to settle right in an area where pedestrians walked to work and so on. So we had a number of people hurt, and they had to close that whole area in order to protect the passengers that were egressing through that area. The wind can do some strange things.
And for those of you who operate drones in and around buildings, even if it's not a tall skyscraper, that's a fact that you have to take into account, that if you are flying on anything like a windy day, you can have turbulence happen that will knock your drone off kilter and possibly allow you to lose control of it. And of course, this kind of low-level turbulence isn't visible. So you have to be aware of what the weather situation is. You have to be aware of what your limitations are as a drone operator. And as pilot in command, you have the ultimate responsibility for the safety of the people flying that aircraft and anyone around that aircraft. And that's a responsibility that the FAA takes very seriously, and that if you do anything that is outside of regulatory requirements for flying, you can be in a world of hurt, not just from getting your certificate taken away from you, but from legal ramifications of if you hurt somebody, there can be something happening outside of the NTSB in the civil or even the criminal courts where you can be in trouble. So again, if you're flying something professionally, if you are doing something where the potential is to cause damage or injury to people, take extra care. Scope out, as we say all the time, do your pre-flight. Scope out not just the aircraft you're flying, scope out the territory you're going to be flying in. Are there utility poles? Are there other antennas? Are there guy wires? Is there anything, tree limbs even, anything that could limit your ability to see the drone, your ability to maneuver that drone, or hazards that could take the drone right out of the sky? I'm adamant about drone safety, and some of you might be asking, well, okay, so if it's a 30-pound drone, 40-pound drone, so what? Why is that such a big deal? Which gets us back to what you were doing this week at NBAA. There were probably a lot of autonomous aircraft, very large-sized drones, that were on display there during NBAA.
At NBAA, front and center, there was one great big passenger-carrying drone, Joby. There was several others on display. It's coming. We're going to have pilotless drones flying passengers from points A to B in and around our major cities in the very near future. And technology is pushing it too fast. They're already doing it in China and in the Middle East and big Dubai. So they're building the experience base, and it's coming here. You know, the major airlines are on it. You know, the first-class passengers that are paying upwards of $20,000 to go on an international flight won't think very much about paying another $1,000 or $2,000 to avoid the traffic from Chicago to the airport or downtown Manhattan to the airport. So there's going to be a market for that.
The general term that's used, NBAA and elsewhere, because I saw Joby also on display at South by Southwest in 2023, is what they call advanced air mobility. What it boils down to is you have vertically operating aircraft, like large drones, flying passengers, primarily passengers and also cargo. Initially, the idea is you'll have to have some sort of rated pilot in there flying passengers. Now, because of cost considerations and other considerations, there's a huge move to make this completely autonomous. That is, having a flight in an aircraft without an onboard pilot. For obvious reasons, U.S. Is a very litigious sort of regulatory heavy sort of place. It will not happen here first, but it's happening or about to happen multiple places overseas, like you mentioned. And in my opinion, there will be a lot of lessons learned at the cost of several aircraft and unfortunately a few lives along the way. And those lessons learned will make advanced air mobility safer in the future. But imagine this future. You're living in a large metropolitan area. I live in the San Francisco area. And traveling to the airport might be an hour and a half, 2 hour thing. How attractive would it be to have a 15-minute flight from a local airport or some other designated place specifically designed for advanced air mobility vehicles? Technologically, quite possible. Getting around the fact that your neighbors might not want to have this sort of thing happening several hours a day and into the dead of night, that's a whole nother story. Given this potential future of having all sorts of vertical takeoff and landing aircraft taking passengers to and from airports and other areas in large metropolitan areas, and this happening in people's neighborhoods, maybe at local airports, like I live near the Palo Alto Airport, and maybe that'll be designated as a location, but it could be abandoned shopping malls are suddenly going to be advanced air mobility locations. We will have these aircraft taking off over and over again all through the day. And yes, I've heard the pitches from the various manufacturers saying, "Wow, we've done our test, and the sound that comes off of this is several decibels lower than even the quietest helicopter." That might be true. Several decibels lower is still going to be too loud if before I had 0 decibels and now I have a lot of decibels.
And there's a lot of growing pains coming our way. But I believe that it's going to happen in a big way. We just have to recognize that and go forward. Just this week, the FAA put out the rules for pilots on these particular types of vehicles, mandated the pilot to fly them around, at least initially, and had some other requirements of the pilot flying the airplane. And so they're gearing up themselves for these things to become commonplace. And I mean, there's some big ones, 10 motors, 12 motors, a lot of redundancy for safety. So it'll be interesting to see who survives and who succeeds. It's going to be him.
From the operational perspective, there are just two areas that I'd like to mention. One is going to be maintenance, because until recently, the FAA treated electric motors not in the same way they would treat a fuel, a petrochemical engine, reciprocating engine, or a turbine engine. And those rules are changing. But the other issue is there's going to be a learning curve in the maintenance community how to maintain these kinds of aircraft with the unique kind of flight characteristics they have, the unique kind of environmental exposures they'll have. Another issue is the future of those people who fly this. If you're going to be a commercial pilot with an eye toward having a future in the airlines, a lot of times you get your hours doing all kinds of commercial flying. Will commercial flying an advanced air mobility vehicle be something that will be attractive to someone who has an ultimate career goal outside of that area? Or will it be sort of like a sideline where, yes, you can gather hours in that, but the rest of the aviation community and the airlines might look at that and say, you know what? We'd rather you fly in a regular regional airliner, multi-engine aircraft that we know. Advanced air mobility, yes, those hours might count, but it's not good enough for us. I don't know how that's going to play out in years to come, but both the maintenance community and the pilot community have to look at this from, it might be interesting, it might be well paying, but is it something I can build a career on? Those are questions to be answered in the future.
And the future is now. It's going to be right upon us. And you're right. The airlines may not consider, or even the FAA may not consider those hours flying a drone from an office to be equal to the hours to qualify for the 1500-hour rule to be a first officer. So there's a lot of unanswered questions in there. It's a timely subject, so we needed to do it.
We're happy we're able to catch you because, as a newly minted Hall of Famer yourself, who's jet setting to another continent as we speak in the next few hours or so, this is going to be your life in the future. Very busy, very in demand, and if we have to do the interview from an airport executive lounge, then by golly, we'll do that. And with that, I'll give my next to last word, which is basically, it's not just about drones. Drones are just the beginning of a whole range of safety issues and career development issues, which are unfolding in front of us as we speak. And we'll find out more in the years to come as some of these theoretical business models actually come to fruition and turn out to be a regular use of this advanced technology. John, as usual, you have the last word.
And as usual, this will be a twofer. Right? So you're going to fly drones with nobody in it. Pre-planning is very, very critical. So all types of air vehicles need to be thoroughly pre-planned before you go fly it. The vehicle needs to be inspected, needs to be looked at to make sure there's no damage, especially when there's no pilot on board to report it. That puts an added burden on maintenance to make sure they do those inspections before the vehicle takes off again. Make sure there wasn't a bird strike or something didn't happen. It didn't go reported. That portion of the pre-flight, however manifests itself, is very important. When the drone is in the air, the operator who is on the ground has to use all the electronic sensors that the vehicle has on board to avoid other airplanes, avoid going into airspace that he shouldn't be going into. So there's going to be a whole bunch of things that are going to be needed to be monitored so that we don't have collisions between these vehicles and airplanes and helicopters. So if you're going to go flying, whether it's on a drone or with an airplane, please do it safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.